Who is Jesus, and who are we because of Jesus? Those are two questions that I asked and were posed to me every day for probably 3 years while I was in seminary. Every day we would begin a class, who is Jesus, and who am I because of Jesus? That can be a personal question, as I just phrased it there. It can be a communal question. It might be a question that the church asks us from time to time. Who are we because of Jesus? Who is Jesus, and who are we because of Jesus? Who is Jesus? Right? Think about that question for a minute. And I'll bet, you know, every church in this city probably has a different answer for who Jesus is. A lot of them probably agree. There's probably some nuance from place to place. I'll bet there's different answers for everyone here sitting in a pew here. Is Jesus a teacher? Is Jesus the Son of God? Is Jesus a miracle worker? Is Jesus the Messiah? Is Jesus a prophet? Is Jesus a rebel-rousing radical man? We sang a few months ago. Is Jesus a bleeding heart liberal? Is Jesus a righteous conservative? Who is Jesus? you can say yes to all of those things. You could open up the Bible and see a yes to any one of those at different places. That's the interesting thing about it. So, for instance, in New Testament, when we studied the New Testament, we open up the Gospel of Luke, like we're reading today, and you might say, for Luke, who is Jesus, and who are we, his followers, because of Jesus? And that might be a very different answer than if you're studying the letter of Paul's letter to the Romans, and you say, who is Jesus, and who are we, his followers, because of Jesus? Well, here in Luke's Gospel, the presentation, the baptism of Jesus, we get an answer to that question, don't we? Let me read it for you to remind you. When all the people were baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized and was praying, the heaven was opened, and the Holy Spirit descended upon him in bodily form like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you I am well pleased." So, pop quiz, who is Jesus? He's the Beloved. He is God's Son. Anything else? He is baptized. Maybe that makes him a Baptist. I don't know. Another thing in the story I just noticed as I was reading it out loud, he was praying. So Jesus is one who prays. He is a prayer. Say that fast, it makes him a prayer. He was one of the people. It says all the people. And then there's Jesus. Yeah, very good. What else? Anything else? The earlier verses, verses 15 to 17, we are introduced to John the Baptist, and he says some things about Jesus. If you ask John the Baptist, well, who is Jesus? Well, the question was put to John the Baptist, are you the Messiah? And John says, not me, but there's another. So the answer to that question for John the Baptist might be the Messiah, right? Messiah is a biblical word. It means the anointed one, God's deliverer. So that passage from Isaiah that we read that was used as our call to worship today is from Isaiah 43, beautiful words. That was a rendition of a modern reading from Eugene Peterson's The Message. He has a, kind of a fun way of putting things in contemporary language. But the gist of that in Isaiah passage, I think of that and of Jesus' baptism. It said, I have called you by name. You are mine. The choir sings it sometimes. Do not be afraid. I am with you. I have called you by name. You are mine. I mean, it's like God claims Jesus. And this is who Jesus is. You are my beloved. Correction, because I was going to point this out. Verse 22 says, the Holy Spirit descended upon him in bodily form like a dove, and a voice from heaven said, actually just said, a voice came from heaven, comma, you are my son, the beloved. With you I am well pleased. There's a footnote. Does yours have a footnote? The footnote says, or it could have said, my beloved son. And I was just thinking about that. You know, I wouldn't want the job of translating the Bible from its many languages, you know, Hebrew and Greek into English and trying to choose words. But sometimes I wish they would have asked me. Because, you know, the way you say a thing is important. And if it could be the other way, it could say my son or my beloved versus the beloved, right? Imagine if I introduced, let's say Lynn was here and I introduced her. This is Lynn, the beloved. In this case, it might be. So that opens it to a wider belovedness, right? But if it says, you know, this is Lynn, my beloved. If I introduce Lynn as my beloved, that kind of is like, oh, isn't that sweet? I kind of feel that way, right, don't you? If you say the beloved, it's like, what happened to that guy? Where is he coming from? But your point is good. So since it says the beloved, maybe he's beloved by all, though he wasn't. He's invited to be. He was supposed to be. So one of the answers to that question of who is Jesus is the beloved. And so I might wrestle with that idea and think about who am I because of Jesus. You know, I would expand this story a little bit, you know, knowing who Jesus was and where he goes from here and how he invites us in to his life, and how we are at some point invited into this baptismal experience of being claimed by God and known, right, and named, that we are beloved as well. So who is Jesus? He's beloved. And who am I? I am also beloved. This one's a little harder for some people. Who is Jesus? He's the Son of God. Who am I? I am a child of God. You'd probably look at me crooked if I said I was the Son of God. Rightly so. But I think it's true that we all claim through Jesus that title of children. Even, and this predates Jesus, by the way, because that passage in Isaiah, you know, probably 500 years before Jesus was born, they were, you know, God claimed Israel as his beloved and as children. So it's not a new thing. It's a metaphor. It's always been a metaphor to be children of the beloved God. The other interesting play on words is, you know, the title of the sermon is Be Loved. How do you get to be the beloved? Be loved. Well, how do you get to be loved? What'd you say? Be the beloved. I think a lot of times the answer to being loved is just to recognize what already exists. That, and I think that's the promise of both Isaiah and Luke and Jesus' ministry, is that we are all. There is no place that is outside God's love. That is the gospel. There is no place that is outside God's love. Sometimes we miss it. I found this paragraph from a writer, Meg Silf, in her book, Inner Compass. It's about sometimes we miss. We don't see the obvious. If it's not obvious to you that you are beloved, and that you, that God is present to you, then think about this. God comes to us not where we should have been if we had made all the right choices in life, not where we could have been if we had taken every opportunity that God has offered us, not where we wish we were if we didn't have to be in the place where we find ourselves, not where we think we are because our minds are out of sync with our hearts, not where other people think we are or think we ought to be, when they are attending to their own agendas. God meets us where we really are. God meets us where we really are. So, you don't necessarily have to go to the River Jordan. You don't have to go to that spot over there. You don't have to be here in church. You can just know that wherever you are loved. And being loved makes you one of the beloved. I hope that feels like good news to you today, because it does to me. And it's hard for me to remember sometimes, especially at my darkest and, you know, whatever. but to know that I am beloved, and it's not a special way that I have to be or think or thing to say or action to do. A lot of those things are good, you know, thinking and acting in certain ways. We encourage that around here. But they don't precede God's love. God's love comes first. And then we act in certain ways. And then we're willing to say things. And then we're willing to be for other people. Because we are, like Jesus, the beloved. So that's our message of hope and promise today. And just for fun, because it's January and I think it's a good time for a top 10 list. This isn't a top 10, but to think about ways that we often miss the hidden God. We think God is hidden. So here's 10 ways in which to miss the hidden God. It's kind of sarcastic in a way, or not, it's satirical, a better word. One, live life at high speed. Run hard, no exceptions. Number two, stay scattered and distracted. The more activity and busyness, the better the distraction. Miss the hidden God. Take everything personally. Never evaluate. Agree always. Miss the hidden God. Use blame and criticism liberally. It's invigorating. I wasn't responsible. You were. Everything is your fault. Don't go out and do these and say you got told to do this at church. This is how you miss the hidden God. Don't laugh, especially at yourself. Use sarcasm as humor. Guilty. Number six, stay tied to your past. Elevate it to greatness. Live remembering and longing for what was. These were written for us, aren't they? Use the word because. I can't change because. Because it's so little appreciated as a solvent for responsibility. Try it. It works. Never question or think for yourself. Just keep moving and accepting without questioning. Refer back to 1 and 3. Those are about being busy, taking things personally. Number 9, continue to think of God as invisible and distant and surely not present in this room at this moment, not while I'm reading this list. And number 10, reinforce the belief that your life is going to happen soon. This is not it, not yet, but surely one day. Anybody guilty of any of these? The whole thing. Yeah, if it weren't so true, we probably wouldn't laugh. But God is not hidden. God can't always be seen, but God is not hidden. That's the affirmation. So, thanks be to God for all of the beloved. And I'm grateful that you guys are here today.